bridge, then none of this would have happened. But I foolishly thought I could save you from the Keeper's clutches. Those sisters and the prelate would be alive now had I finished the job. I failed the Creator when you tricked me into killing Perry. But that will not save you again. Your vile underworld tricks will not save you again. Pasha, please just listen to me. You're being lied to. Please listen. The prelate isn't dead. I can take you to her. You wish to kill me, too. That's all you ever talk of, killing. You profane us all. And to think I could have ever thought I loved you. She raised the Dakra and with a scream ran for him. Richard somehow managed to pull the sword, woozily wondering which image of her to try to stop. The anger, the magic of the sword brought strength to his arms. He brought the sword up as she dove for him, Dakra first. The two images of her converged. The sword never touched her. With a shriek, she was propelled over the railing above him. She screamed all the way down. Richard's eyes winced shut when he heard her scream terminate as she hit the stone. Richard opened his eyes to see a stunned Warren standing in the doorway. He remembered Jedediah's fall on the stairs. "Oh, dear spirits, no," Richard whispered. He levered himself to his feet and took a quick glance over the edge. People rushed from different directions toward the body. Warren was shuffling woodenly toward the railing. Richard stopped him halfway there. "No, Warren, don't look." Tears welled up in Warren's eyes. Richard put his arms around his friend. "Why did you do that?" he thought. "I could have done it. I was going to do it. You didn't have to." Over Warren's shoulder, Richard saw Sister Verna standing in the room. "She killed Perry," Warren said. "I heard her admit it. She was going to kill you." "I could have done it," Richard thought. "You didn't need to." But instead he said, "Thank you, Warren. You saved my life." "She was going to kill you," he cried against Richard's shoulder. "Why would she do that?" Sister Verna put a comforting hand to Warren's back. "She was lied to by the Sisters of the Dark. The Keeper filled her mind with lies. She heard the whispers of the darkness. The Keeper can make even the good listen to his whispers. You did a brave thing, Warren." "Then why do I feel so ashamed? I loved her, and I killed her." Richard simply held him as he wept. Sister Verna pulled them back into the room. She made Richard bend over as she examined his head. Blood was dripping all over the floor. "This must be tended to. I can't fix this much damage." "I can," Warren said. "I'm fair at healing. Let me do it." When Warren had finished, Sister Verna made Richard hold his head over the basin while she poured the ewer of water over him, washing off the blood. Warren sat on the edge of a chair, his head in his hands. Richard thought that he was going to need the basin. Warren's head came up when the sister finished. "I figured out the rule you told me about. People will believe a lie because they want to believe it's true, or because they are afraid it is. Just like Pasha believed a lie, am I right?" Richard smiled. "You are, Warren." Warren managed a weak smile. "Sister Verna, can you take this collar off me?" Sister Verna hesitated. "You would have to pass the test of pain, Warren."
"Sister," Richard said, "what do you think he just did?"
"What do you mean?"
"The young wizards sent back through the valley are able to pass because they don't have sufficient power to draw the spells to them. They are not full wizards. Zed told me that wizards have to pass a test of pain. Over the millennia, the sisters have convoluted that into making them endure physical pain. I think they're wrong. I think the test Warren just passed is more pain than the sisters could ever give. Am I right, Warren?" He nodded, his face going white again.
"Nothing they ever did hurt like this.
Sister, remember when I told you how I turned the blade white and killed that woman by loving her? Maybe that, too, was a form of the test of pain. I know how much that hurt." She spread her hands in dismay.
"Do you really think that one with a gift must kill someone they love to pass the test? Richard, that can't be."
"No, sister. They don't have to kill someone they love. but they must prove they can make the right decision. They must prove they have what it takes to choose the greater good. Would one with the gift be a good servant to this Creator of yours, to the hope of life, if they could act only for selfish needs? Giving someone pain as the sisters do doesn't prove anything except that the victim does not die. Wouldn't serving the light of life and loving life require that the person prove instead of their own free will they would choose right, choose that light of life and love for all people? Dear Creator, she whispered, have we had it wrong all this time? Her hand covered her mouth a moment. And we thought we were bringing the Creator's light to these boys. Sister Verna's back straightened with resolve. She stood before Warren, putting her hands to the sides of his Radahan. As she stood with her eyes closed, her hands to the collar, there was a humming vibration in the air. After a moment, silence settled over the room, and then Richard heard a snapping sound. The Radahan cracked and fell away. Warren looked positively giddy at the sight of the broken collar. Richard wished it could be that easy for him. "What are you going to do now, Warren?" Richard asked. "Are you going to leave the palace?" "Maybe, but I wish to study the book some more first, if the sisters will allow it." "They will allow it," Sister Verna said. "I will see to it." "Then, maybe, I would like to travel to Adendril, to the Wizard's Keep, and study the books and prophecies you told me were kept there."
"That sounds like a wise plan, Warren. Sister, I must be going."
"Warren," she said, "why don't you come along until I reach the valley? You are free now." She glanced to the balcony. "I think it would do you good to get away from here for a time and think of other things, and I could use some help when we reach the valley, if Richard accomplishes what he thinks he will."
"Really? I would like that."
As the three of them lugged their gear toward the stables, three guards, Kevin, Walsh, and Bullesden, spotted them and ran to catch up.
"We may have found them, Richard," Kevin said.
"May have? What do you mean? Where are they?"
"Well, last night the Lady Sepha set sail. We talked to the people down at the docks, who said they saw some women, maybe the sisters, go aboard. Most agree they saw six women go aboard in the darkness just before she sailed."
"Sailed?" Richard groaned. "What's the Lady Sepha?"
"A ship, a big ship. They left with the tide late in the night. They have a good lead, and from what I hear, there isn't a ship in port that can catch the Lady Sepha or go as far to sea."
"We can't go after them and do your other task," Sister Verna said.
Richard shifted his pack in annoyance.
"You're right. If it's really them, they're gone for now. But I know where they're going. We'll have to deal with them later. At least the Palace of the Prophets is safe. We have more important things to tend to right now. Let's get the horses and be on our way."
Chapter 67 Kaelin ran down the dark stone corridors and through the tomb-like chambers. The first rays of light splashed golden patches against the coarse, dark gray granite wall opposite the windows as she raced up an east stairway. Her heart pounded with the effort. She had not stopped running since Jebra had told her that she had spied a light in the Wizard's Keep. That Zed was back. She remembered what it felt like to run with long hair, the weight of it, the way it streamed out behind, flowing with her strides. She felt none of that now. But it didn't matter. She felt only desperate elation that Zed was back. She had been waiting so long, she screamed his name as she ran. Bursting into the cluttered reading room, she stumbled to a panting halt. Zed stood behind a table with books and papers scattered over it, just as she remembered it from the last time she had seen it months ago. Candles on stands gave the small room an intimate glow. The reading room had but a single window facing the still murky western sky. A big man with bushy eyebrows, mostly gray hair, and a weathered, creased face looked up from a walking stick he was inspecting. Addie sat in a chair to the side, her head flitting toward sounds. Zed cocked his head with a curious frown.
"Zed!" She gulped air. "Oh, Zed, I'm so relieved to see you."
"Zed?" He turned toward the big man. "Zed?"
The big man gave a nod.
"But I like Reuben."
"Zed, I need your help."
"Who be there?"
Addie said from the chair.
Addie, it's me, Kalen.
Kalen? She twitched her head toward Zed. Who be Kalen?
Zed shrugged.
A pretty girl with short hair. She seems to know us.
What are you talking about? Zed, I need your help. Richard is in trouble. I need you.
Zed's brow wrinkled in bewilderment.
Richard? I know that name, I think.
Kalen was frantic.
Zed, what's the matter? Don't you know me? Please, Zed, I need you. Richard needs you.
Richard?
He rubbed his smooth chin as he stared in thought at the table.
Richard?
Your grandson, dear spirits, don't you know your own grandson?
He stared at the table, thinking.
Grandson? I seem to remember... No, can't say I do.
Zed, listen to me. The Sisters of the Light have him. They've taken him away.
Kalen stood silently, catching her breath. Zed's hazel eyes rose slowly to meet her gaze. His face lost its curiosity as his eyebrows drew in to hood his glare.
The Sisters of the Light have Richard?
Kalen had seen wizards angry, but she had never seen a look in any wizard's eyes like the look in Zed's eyes.
Yes,
she said. She wiped her sweaty palms on her hips as she watched a crack run up the stone of the wall behind him.
They came and took him.
Zed put his knuckles to the table and leaned toward her.
That's not possible. They couldn't take him unless they got one of their cursed collars around his neck. Richard would not put a collar around his neck.
Kalen's knees were beginning to tremble.
He did.
His seething expression seemed it might ignite the very air.
Why would he put their collar around his neck, Confessor?
Because,
she said in a small voice,
I made him put it on.
The candles on one of the stands close to him abruptly melted, dripping their wax to hissing puddles on the floor. The iron arms that had held the candles drooped down like a plant needing water. The big man shrank back toward the wall of the shelves. Zed's voice came in a dangerous whisper.
You did what, Confessor?
The room echoed with silence as she stood quivering.
He didn't want to. I had to do it. I told him that he had to put it on to prove he loved me.
Kalen thought she felt herself hit the wall. She couldn't understand why she was sprawled on the floor. She pushed herself up with shaking arms. She gasped as she was suddenly jerked to her feet and slammed against the wall again. Zed, his eyes wild, was right in front of her.
You did that to Richard?
Kalen's head spun. Her own voice sounded distant.
You don't understand. I had to. Zed, I need your help. Richard told me to find you and tell you what I had done. Please, Zed, help him.
In a rage, Zed backhanded her across the face. She skinned her hands on the stone floor as she went down. He yanked her to her feet and slammed her to the wall once more.
I can't help him. No one can, you fool!
Tears ran down her face.
Why? Zed, we have to help him.
She brought up her arms in front of her face to ward him off when he drew his hand back again. It didn't help. Her head smacked the wall again. The room spun. She shook all over. She had never seen a wizard in a rage so out of control. Kayla knew he was going to kill her for what she had done to Richard.
You fool! You treacherous fool! No one can help him now!
Please, Zed, you can. Please help him.
Not even I. No one can get to him. I can't pass the towers. Richard is lost to us. All I had left is lost.
What do you mean, lost to us?
With trembling fingers, she wiped blood from the corner of her mouth. She didn't wipe the tears.
He will be back. He has to come back.
Zed's eyes never left hers as he slowly shook his head.
Not while any of us are alive. The Palace of the Prophets is in a spell of time. Richard will be there for the next 300 years while they train him. We will never see him again. He is lost to this world.
Kalen shook her head.
No, dear spirits, no. That can't be. We will see him. It can't be true.
True, Mother Confessor. You have put him beyond any help. I will never again see my grandson. You will never again see him. Richard will not return to this world for another 300 years. Because of you. Because you made him put on that collar to prove he loves you.
He turned his back to her. Kaylin fell to her knees.
No!
She beat her fists on the floor.
Dear spirits, why have you done this to me?
She cried in choking sobs.
Richard, my Richard!
What happened to your hair, Mother Confessor?
Zed asked in a menacing voice, his back still to her. Kaylin sat back on her heels. What did it matter anymore?
The council convicted me of treason. I have been sentenced to be executed, to be beheaded. The people all cheered at the pronouncement of sentence. They all wanted to see it done, but I escaped.
Zed nodded.
The people shall have their wish.
He grabbed what was left of her hair in his fist and started dragging her from the room.
For what you have done, you shall be beheaded.
Zed!
She screamed.
Zed, please don't do this!
He used magic to drag her down the hall like a sack of feathers.
Tomorrow, at the Winter Solstice Festival, the people shall have their wish. They shall see the Mother Confessor beheaded. As first wizard, I will see to it. I shall see it done.
Kaylin went limp. What did it matter? The good spirits had abandoned her. They had stripped her of everything that mattered. Worse, she herself had condemned Richard to 300 years of the thing he feared most. She wanted to die. Death couldn't come fast enough for her. Richard stood with his hands on his hips as he watched the dark clouds made by spells in the distance, in the Valley of the Lost. They looked beautiful in the sunrise, with golden edges and striations of glowing rays, but he knew they were deadly. Duchailu put an affectionate hand to his arm. My husband makes me proud this day. He returns our land to us, as the old words have foretold. I've explained it to you 12 times, Duchailu. I am not your husband. You have simply misinterpreted the old words. It only means we must do this together, and we haven't done it yet. I wish you would have come with me without bringing everyone else. I don't even know if this will work. We could be killed. She patted his arm reassuringly.
The Kaharan has come. He can do anything. He will return our land.
She left him to his thoughts and started back to the camp.
All our people should be with us. It is their right.
She stopped and turned back.
Will we be leaving soon, Kaharan?
Soon, Richard said absently. She started off again.
I will be with our people when you are ready for me.
The entire Bakabanmana nation was camped behind them. Thousands upon thousands of tents were spread out over the hills like mushrooms after a month of rain. He hadn't been able to talk them out of coming to convince them to wait, so they were all here with him. Richard sighed. What difference did it make? If he was wrong and this failed, he had no reason to worry about the Bakabanmana being disappointed in him. He would be dead. Warren and Sister Verna quietly came up behind.
Richard, Warren said, can we talk to you?
Richard continued to stare out at the storms.
Of course, Warren.
He cast a glance back. What's on your mind? Warren pushed his hands up the opposite sleeves of his robes. Richard thought it made him look very wizard-like when he did that. Warren was going to someday end up being Richard's idea of what a wizard ought to be. Wise, compassionate, and charged with knowledge Richard could only wonder at. If they didn't all die, that was.
Well, Sister Verna and I were talking about what happens after you get through the valley. Richard, I know what you want to do, but we have run out of time. There was never enough time to begin with. Tomorrow is winter solstice. It can't be done.
Just because you don't know how to do something, that doesn't mean it can't be done.
I don't understand,
Richard smiled at them.
You will. You will understand in a few hours.
Warren looked away toward the valley. He idly scratched his nose.
If you say so, Richard.
Sister Verna said nothing. Richard was still trying to get used to her not arguing with him whenever he said something oblique. He wasn't sure she didn't want to.
Warren, about the prophecy, the one about the gateway and the winter solstice, are you sure it's about this winter solstice?
Warren nodded.
And if there were an agent with an open box of Orden and the Skryn bone, are those the only elements needed to open the gateway to tear the veil?
A hot breeze ruffled Warren's hair.
Yes, but you told me Darkin Rawl is dead. There is no agent.
It sounded more like a worried question than a statement.
Must the agent be alive?
Sister Verna asked.
Warren shifted his weight to the other foot.
Well, not in principle, I guess. If he were somehow called back into this world, but I don't see how that could be done. But if it were done, that would be all that was needed.
Richard sighed in frustration. And then this spirit agent could do the things the living agent would have done?
Suspicion crept into Warren's face.
Well, yes and no. It would require another element. A spirit cannot perform the physical requirements necessary to complete the covenant. He would need a coadjutor.
You mean the spirit could not perform certain of the tasks needed, so he would need hands that would work in this world?
Yes. With a helper, a spirit could do what was needed. But how could an agent be called back into this world? I don't see how that could be accomplished.
Sister Verna glanced away.
You had better tell him.
Richard pulled his shirt up and showed Warren the scar. Darkin Rawl burned me with his hand when I unintentionally called him back into this world. He said he was here to tear the veil.
Warren's eyes opened wide. His worried gaze darted to the sister and then back to Richard.
If Darkin Rawl is an agent, as you said, and he has someone to help him, then we are only one element away from destruction, the Skryn bone. We need to know.
Richard pushed the Mrizwith cape back over his shoulders.
Sister Verna, would you help me?
What is it you would like me to do?
The first time you told me how to try to touch my Han, I decided to concentrate on the mental image of my sword. But that time, the first time, I used a background to put against it. It was something from the Book of Magic I told you about, the Book of Counted Shadows. When I tried to touch my Han with the sword on that background, something happened. I was somehow in Dahara, in the People's Palace, where the boxes are. I saw Darkin Rawl. He saw me, too, and spoke to me. He told me he was waiting for me.
Sister Verna's eyebrows lifted.
Did this ever happen again?
No. It frightened the wits out of me. I never used that background again. I think if I use that background now, I may be able to see what is happening there.
She folded her hands together before herself.
I've never heard of such a thing, but it may have something to do with the magic of Orden. It would not be the first thing about you that astonished me. It could be real or just a fear, like a dream.
I need to try. Would you sit with me? I'm afraid of not being able to pull back.
Of course, Richard.
She sat down on the ground and held up a hand.
Come, I will be with you.
Richard pulled the Mrizwith cape around himself as he sat down, folding his legs.
This thing hides my Han. Maybe it will work to keep Darkin Rawl from seeing me this time.
Richard relaxed himself as he held hands with Sister Verna. He concentrated on the mental image of the sword against the black square with a white border, as he had done the first time. As he concentrated, seeking the calm center, something began to happen. The sword, the black square, and the white border all began to shimmer as if seen through heat waves, the same as the first time. The solid form of the sword softened, becoming transparent, and then vanished. The background dissolved. Once again, Richard was looking into the Garden of Life at the People's Palace. He searched the filmy image, seeing white bones where before he had seen burned bodies. He remembered them lying over the short walls in bushes and sprawled on the grass. They were much as he remembered, only now they were mostly exposed bones. Richard saw the white, glowing figure of Darkin Rall, but he was not standing before the stone altar, before the three boxes of Ordon. He was near the circle that had held white sand. The sand had not been there the last time he had seen this vision. A woman in a long brown skirt and white blouse knelt at Darkin Rall's feet, bent over the circle of sand. Richard willed himself closer. She was drawing lines in the sparkling sorcerer's sand. Richard remembered some of the symbols she was drawing. Darkin Rall had drawn them before, when he had opened the box. Richard watched her hand moving slowly, carefully, as she drew the lines of spells. Her right hand, he noticed, was missing the little finger. In the center of the circle, in the center of the sorcerer's sand, sat a round object. Richard went closer. It was carved all over with beasts, just as the prelate had described. Richard wanted to scream with rage. Just then, Darkin Rall lifted his face and looked right into Richard's eyes. A smile slowly spread on his lips. Richard didn't know if Darkin Rall was really looking at him or not, but he didn't wait to find out. With desperate effort, he forced the image of the sword back into his mind, like slamming a door, at the same time banishing the black and white background. With a gasp, Richard forced his eyes open. His chest heaved. Sister Verna's eyes came open, too. "Richard, are you all right? You've been at it an hour. I felt you trying to pull back, so I pulled with you. What happened? What did you see?" "An hour?" Richard was still trying to catch his breath. "I saw Darkin Rall and the Skrinbone. He had a woman there helping him draw spells in the sorcerer's sand." Warren leaned over Richard's shoulder. "Maybe it was just a vision of fear. It may not have been real." "Warren could be right," Sister Verna said. She drew her lower lip through her teeth as she thought. "What did the woman look like?" "Wavy, shoulder-length brown hair, maybe about your size. She was bent over drawing in the sand, so I couldn't see her eyes." Richard pressed his fingers to his forehead as he thought. "Her hand. She was missing the little finger on her right hand." Warren groaned. Sister Verna's eyes slid closed. "What? What's the matter?"
"Sister Odette," she said. "That's Sister Odette."
Warren nodded confirmation. "She has been gone for close to 6 months.
I thought she went to get a boy."
"Curse the spirits,"
Richard said under his breath. He sprang to his feet. "Warren, run and get to Chilu. Tell her we must leave right now." He ground his teeth in frustration. He had thought he had all the time he needed. Well, he still had enough time if he hurried. Duchilu seemed in a trance as Richard pulled her forward by the hand. With the Sword of Truth in his other hand, Richard was in a world of his own, too. His thundering rage was a match for the angry black clouds. The spells of magic circled them, like a pack of dogs around a porcupine, angry and insistent, but holding their distance as they searched for an opening. Wisps of light emerged from the darkness and whirled around them, spiraling down to vanish into an aura that surrounded Duchilu. She seemed to be absorbing the magic as Sister Verna told him she had done before. Together they were the completed link Warren had told him the old book said would contain the power and bring the towers down. Through the waves of heat and the boiling mist, Richard saw the first tower. He pulled Duchilu onward, toward the glistening black wall that disappeared into the darkness overhead. Dust and dirt lifted around them as they rushed toward the arched opening in the wall. Spells snatched at them, but their light was sucked to Duchilu. Richard acted without thought, not knowing what drove him onward and not trying to stop it. If he was to succeed, if he was to save Kaelin, he had to let those things within himself guide him. He had to hope that if he truly had the gift, it would react on instinct, as Nathan had told him, and do what was needed. Duchilu seemed not to notice the sparkling black sand they stood on in the center of the tower. She seemed lost in a private spell of her own, in the power passed down to her from those who built the towers and took her people's land. So far, she had done her half of what was needed. She had protected him. Now Richard had to do his part. On impulse, holding her hand tight in his, he lifted the sword high in the other, pointing it straight up. He lost himself in the fury of the magic, letting it overwhelm him. He felt the heat of it in the calm center he had always sought. He let the rage fill the void. Lightning exploded from the sword, arcing up into the darkness overhead, jumping from one wall to the other, bathing them all in liquid light. The noise was deafening. Fire raced through the black stone until the whole of the tower glowed, the stone turning white in the heat of the luminous discharge. Richard felt as if the lightning were passing through him, too. It seared him with its power, erupting outward and up through the sword. Only his rage enabled him to endure the ferocity of the onrushing force coming from within. Flickering webs of lightning cascaded down the walls and across the black sand, until everything was alive with it. The black sand turned white, as had the walls, and the world burned with pulsing fire and light. Abruptly, it ended. The lightning cut off, the fire winked out, and the roar of noise ceased, leaving silence ringing in his ears. The polished black stone of the tower was left a blinding white gloss. Tuchailu seemed still not to notice what was around her, and Richard pulled her onward to complete the task for which they both had been born. In the White Tower, as he held the sword high, he expected the flash of heat and light again, but it did not come. Instead, the counter to it, the balance to it, exploded forth. Concussion ripped the air, threatening to strip flesh from bone as black lightning blasted upward, a void in the light. Like the lightning before, Richard felt the might of the power erupting from deep within himself, as if his very soul were pouring it forth. The snaking void in the light raked the walls, and with a thunderous roar, pierced a void into the darkness above. As the black lightning twisted into the darkness overhead, shadows oozed down the white walls, making it seem as if they were melting into the depths of eternal night. Darkness reached the ground and flowed toward them, soaking into the white sand, turning it black. Richard never gave thought to trying to escape the encroaching night. When it reached them, he felt as if they were being plunged into icy water. Tuchailu, her eyes closed, shivered with the touch of it. Richard noted it, but through the wrath of the sword's magic, it was a distant sensation that only fed the anger. It seemed the whole world had vanished forever into inky obscurity. Light and vision were beyond even memory. Richard felt the undulating, twisting rope of the black lightning, the void in the world of life, cut off. Sudden silence replaced the cacophony. He could hear himself breathing hard. He could hear Tuchailu doing the same. Light and life and warmth emerged from the cold void. Outside, through the arches in the stone, now glossy black, where it was once white, Richard could see light coming through the thinning fog. The ground that before was baked and barren was now green and lush. Still holding hands, he and Tuchailu stood in the archway, watching the haze and smoke lift on a world no one had seen in thousands of years. Hand in hand, they walked out into the cool air, across the thick grass, and through shafts of sunlight. The storms of spells were gone, the dark clouds they spawned evaporating as they lifted. The air smelled fresh and clean. The feel of life vibrated around them. The valley off to the pale blue line of mountains in the distance was lush and green. Groves of trees were gathered in places along meandering streams. Gentle rises overlaid each other in differing shades of green. Richard could understand why the Bakoban Mana would want their land back. It was a place that simply looked like home. This was a place of light and hope that would have stayed in the people's heart throughout all the dark centuries. It was not a place that belonged to them. It was they that belonged to this place.
"You have done it, Kaharan,"
Tuchailu said.
"You have returned our home from beyond the mist."
Richard saw a few people scattered about in the distance, those who had been trapped in spells for untold years. They wandered aimless and confused. He had to find two he knew. Sister Verna and Warren galloped toward them, bringing his horse. Before they had completely stopped, Richard was up on Bonnie. Duchailu thrust a hand up. She wanted to go with him. Reluctantly, he pulled her up behind.
"Richard,"
Warren said,
"that was astonishing. How did you do it?"
"I haven't the slightest idea, Warren. I had been hoping you could explain it to me." Richard galloped Bonnie off in the direction he remembered seeing Chase and Rachel when he had been through the valley the first time. Warren and Sister Verna followed after. It wasn't long before he found them sitting on the bank of a brook, Chase with his arm around Rachel's shoulders and his usual look of strained tolerance nowhere in evidence. Looked confused. Richard swung his leg over Bonnie's neck and leapt down.
"Chase, are you all right?"
"Richard, what's going on? Where are we? We were coming to get you. You can't go."
He looked around.
"You can't go into the valley. Zed needs you. The veil is torn."
"I know." Richard handed the reins to Sister Verna and quickly introduced everyone. "My friends will explain it all to you." He put a knee to the ground in front of Rachel. The dark, amber-colored stone of tears hung on a chain around her neck just as he remembered it. "Rachel, are you all right? How do you feel?" She blinked up at him.
"I was in a nice place, Richard."
"This is a nice place, too. You will be fine now, Rachel. Did Zed give you that stone?" She nodded.
"He said you might want it, and I was to keep it for you until you came to get it."
"That's why I'm here, Rachel. May I have it, then?" She smiled and pulled it over her head. Richard unclasped the chain and pulled the stone off. Holding it in his hand, he could feel its warmth and Zed's presence. The chain was too small for him. He handed it back to Rachel, telling her it looked pretty on her than it would on him, and then strung the stone onto a leather thong he had ready. He hung the Stone of Tears around his neck along with the Ajeel and the Dragon's Tooth. From the corner of his eye, he watched the distant dot growing in the sky.
"Richard," Warren said, "after seeing what I just saw with the towers, I have no doubt you can do what you say you can do, but you have no time to reach where you must go. Tomorrow the world is going to end if you don't get there. What are you going to do?"
"Where is it we are going, my husband?" Duchailu asked. "We are not going anywhere, Duchailu. You are staying here with your people."
"Husband?"
Chase said, a scowl finally starting to creep onto his face. "I am not her husband. It's just some silly idea she got into her head." Richard watched the red shape growing, high up in the sky. "Look, I don't have time to explain it. Sister Verna and Warren can tell you about it." Sister Verna, a suspicious frown on her face, took a step toward him.
"What are you going to do? Warren was right. You have no time."
In the distance, the red wings spread wide as the dragon plunged into a dive. Richard unhooked his pack from Bonnie, slinging it onto his back. He gave Bonnie's neck a goodbye hug. He hooked on the quiver and slipped the bow over his shoulder. From the corner of his eye, he watched the dragon plummet straight down.
"I'm going to have time. I must leave you now, sister."
"What do you mean you're leaving? How?"
At the last instant, the dragon pulled out of the dive. Her long neck stretched out. Wings spread wide, she shot toward them at incredible speed, skimming along just above the ground.
"I have only one chance to reach my goal in time. I must fly."
"Fly?"
Warren and Sister Verna shouted together. Scarlet swept up with a roar. Everyone else saw her for the first time. Immense wings beat to slow the dragon's speed. Their clothes flapped in the sudden burst of wind. The grass all around flattened in the gusts. Warren, Sister Verna, and Duchailu stepped back in surprise. Scarlet settled to the ground as her forward speed was brought to a halt by her beating wings.
"Richard,"
Sister Verna said as she slowly shook her head,
"you have the oddest pets of anyone I've ever met."
"Red dragons are pets to no one, sister. Scarlet is a dear friend."
Richard trotted toward the huge red dragon glistening in the sunlight. Scarlet snorted a small cloud of gray smoke.
"Richard, how good to see you again. Since you called me so urgently with my tooth,
I presume you're in trouble again, as usual.
Trouble indeed, my friend. Richard patted a glossy red scale. I've missed you, Scarlet.
Well, I've already eaten. I guess I must instead give you a ride in the sky to work up an appetite. Then I will eat you.
Richard laughed. Where is your little one? Her ears twitched.
Off hunting. Gregory is not so little anymore. He misses you and would like to see you.
I would like to see Gregory, too, but I'm in a terrible hurry right now. I'm running out of time.
Richard!
Duchailu ran toward him. I must go, too. I must go where my husband goes. Richard leaned toward Scarlet's ear as she lowered her head and peered at him with one yellow eye. A little flame, Scarlet, he whispered, just for effect. Don't hurt her. Duchailu leapt back with a squeal as a burst of fire charred the grass at her feet. Duchailu, your land is returned to your people. You must stay with them. You are their spirit woman. They need you. They need your guidance. I would ask something else of you. Protect the towers that are on your land. I don't know if they can bring any harm, but as the Kaharan, I order that no one shall ever enter them. Guard them, and keep all others out too. Live in peace with others who would live in peace with you, but continue to practice with the blades so you may protect yourselves. Duchailu drew herself up tall. The little strips of cloth on her prayer dress fluttered in the breeze, along with her thick black hair. You are wise, Kaharan. I will see that it is as you say until you return to your wife and your people. Richard, Sister Verna said, her face held a serious look, do you know where Kaelin is? Adendril. She would have gone there. The prophecy takes place before her people. She will be in Adendril. The time of choosing is upon you, Richard. Where are you going now? He looked long into her steady gaze. Dahara. After appraising him silently for a moment, she at last embraced him in a warm hug. She kissed his cheek. And then? Richard raked his fingers through his thick hair. Somehow I will stop what is to happen in Dahara, and then I must get to Adendril before it's too late. Take care, my friend. She nodded. Warren and I will see to the people here who have been released from the spells. They will need guidance. I have been a sister of the light for nearly 200 years. All I ever wanted was to help people who needed it. But you had help. There is no excuse for taking you or others. I want to try to set some of this right. Warren gave Richard a firm hug. Thanks, Richard, for everything. I look forward to seeing you again. Richard winked. Try not to have any adventures.
I'll go with you, Chase said.
No. Richard wiped a hand over his face. No, go home, Chase. Take Rachel to her new mother and her brothers and sisters. Emma will be worried sick by now. She hasn't seen you in ages. Go home to your wife and family. I'll need to be returning home soon, too. Richard turned back to Sister Verna. We must do something about those six sisters. They're sailing for Westland. The people there have no protection against magic. In Westland, those sisters will be like hawks in a hatchery. I think that journey will take them some time. You have time enough for them, Richard.
Good.
Kaelin will want to wed before the Mud People. Then I may need to come and get some advice on how to handle those six. Talk to Nathan and Anne. We can decide what to do then.
Be careful,
Warren said. He stood stoically with his hands in the opposite sleeves of his robes. And I don't just mean with yourself. Don't forget the things Nathan and I have told you. Don't forget that everyone else is in danger from what you can do with the Stone of Tears. I don't think you have yet reached your time of choosing.
I'll do my best.
Scarlet lowered herself so he could climb up onto her shoulders. He gripped the black-tipped spines and hauled himself up. Richard gave a slap to a red scale.
To Dahara, my friend, again.
With a roar of flame, Scarlet launched into the sky. Chapter 68. In the distance, in the pre-dawn gloom, he could see the green glow. It rose from the people's palace, through the glass roof of the Garden of Life, like a beacon. Richard had seen that color of green from only one place, the underworld. The icy wind tore at his clothes as Scarlet's wings beat with a steady cadence. She had put strenuous effort into the flight to Dahara. She understood the danger posed by the Keeper. The underworld would take her, too, and she hated Darkin Rall. He had stolen her egg before and used it to enslave her. As she began her descent, she peered back, her ears turning toward him. "There will be enough time, Richard. We can still make it to Aiden Drill. It is only just dawn. I know you'll get me there, Scarlet. I'll try not to give you too much time to rest." Scarlet banked to the left, steepening their descent down toward the courtyard, where they had been before. It was a place the huge dragon could land in the dark with room to spare. The palace's vast jumble of roofs and walls rushed up toward them with frightening speed. Richard's toes tingled with the feeling of floating off her back as she plummeted. Suddenly, from the darkness below, a blinding flash of lightning crackled up all about them. It left yellow lines of afterimage in his vision. Before Richard could make sense of it, another came. Scarlet roared in pain and pitched to the left. They dropped into a sickening spiral toward the ground. Richard gripped her spines as the huge dragon tried to recover. On the vast steps rotating below, he saw the woman illuminated by the light of the next bolt of lightning she sent forth from her hands. Once again, Scarlet roared in pain. He couldn't see the woman in the darkness when the lightning cut off. Scarlet struggled to check the uncontrolled descent. Richard knew that another bolt of the lightning would finish her. He tore the bow from his back and yanked an arrow from the quiver. "Scarlet, make fire so I can see her." As Richard drew the string to his cheek, Scarlet let out a fiery roar of pain and anger. In its red glow, he saw the woman raise her arms again. Before he could call the target, the spiral took her out of his line of sight. "Scarlet, look out!" Scarlet drew back her right wing, and they tipped the other way. The yellow lightning streaked past to the left, just missing them. The ground was coming up fast. In the flickering red light of the dragon's blast of fire, Richard saw her raise her hands again. He drew the bowstring and twisted his body with their motion to keep her in sight. Before she could disappear again, he called the target. The instant it came to him, the arrow was away. "Turn!" Scarlet beat her right wing, making them wobble in the air as the yellow bolt erupted past, between the dragon's neck and wing. Almost before it began, the lightning cut off. A ripple of total blackness passed over them. The arrow had found its mark. The Keeper now had Sister Odette. With a hard jolt, they hit the ground. Richard was thrown off and tumbled across the ground. He sat up and shook his head, then sprang to his feet. "Scarlet, are you hurt bad? Are you alive?"
"Go," she groaned in a deep, vibrating voice. "Hurry. Get him before he has us all."
She held her trembling left wing out. Richard stroked her snout. "I'll be back. Hang on." Richard drew the sword as he charged up the hill of steps. He didn't need to call forth the anger. It was with him before he had even touched the hilt. He ran in a blind rage toward doors between the colossal columns. As he ran through the doors, a handful of soldiers charged out of the darkness. Without pause, Richard scythed into them. His blade flashed in the torchlight, coming from the vast halls inside. Richard danced with the spirits. His blade was fluid grace among the hacking soldiers. The first he cut in half, breastplate and all. Every charge was met with swift steel. In a matter of moments, the 15 men lay scattered across the bloody floor, and then Richard was moving again. So much for his welcome back. He remembered the Daharan army pledging their loyalty to him the last time he had been here, when he had killed Darkin Rall. Maybe they just didn't know who he was. More likely, they knew precisely who he was. Richard chose a hall that led in the direction of the Garden of Life. Three levels of balconies looked down on the hall. Most of the torches were dark. He saw no people as he ran past a devotion square with white sand raked in circles around a pitted rock. From a staircase at the side, a half-dozen moored Sith charged down, running toward him. Each wore her red leather uniform, and each had an Ajeel in her hand.
Through the rage, he realized that he couldn't use the sword on them, or they would capture him by its magic. He was furious. He needed to get to Darkenroll. He didn't need to have to deal with these deadly women. Reluctantly, Richard sheathed his sword and drew his knife. Dunna had told him once that if he had just used his knife instead of his sword, he would have had her. He was not going to be able to outrun them. He was going to have to kill them. The biggest, a blonde-headed woman at the lead, held her hands out as he went for her.
"Lord Rawl, no!"
The other five slid to a stop behind her. Richard slashed at her, but she lurched back into a half-crouch with her hands held out to the sides.
"Lord Rawl, stop! We are here to help you!"
Though he had put the sword away, he had no shortage of rage of his own. He had to get to Darkenroll if he was to get to Caelan.
"Help me in the afterlife. You will be there shortly."
"No, Lord Rawl. I am Kara. We are here to help you. You cannot go that way. That hall is not secure."
Richard stood panting, knife in hand.
"I don't believe you. You want to capture me. I know very well what Mord Sith do to their captives."
"I knew Denna, your mistress. You wear her aegil. Mord Sith do not live to hurt their captives any longer. You set us free. We would never hurt the one who set us free. We revere you."
"When I left here, I told the soldiers to burn all those outfits and give you new clothes. I ordered the aegil taken from you. If you revere me, why have you not followed my orders?"
A sly smile touched her lips as she lifted an eyebrow over a cold blue eye.
"Because you cannot free us just to enslave us in a life you choose. We are free to choose for ourselves. You made that possible. We chose to fight to protect our Lord Rawl. We have sworn to lay down our lives for you if necessary. Not only the men of the first file can protect you. We have chosen to be your personal bodyguards. Not even the first file dared argue with us. We take orders from no one but Lord Rawl."
"Then I order you to leave me alone."
"I'm sorry, Lord Rawl, but we cannot follow that order."
Richard didn't know what to believe. This could just be a trap.
"I'm here to stop Darkenroll. I have to get to the Garden of Life. If you don't get out of my way, I will have to kill you."
"We know where you go," Kara said. "We will take you, but you must not go that way. We do not hold all the palace. That way is not safe. In fact, this whole section of the palace is in the hands of the insurgents. The first file would have lost 1,000 men to come down here. We told them we would go, that it would be less risk to you. For that reason only, they agreed."
Richard started angling around the women.
"I don't believe you, and I can't risk what you would do if you are lying. This is too important. If you tried to stop me, I will have to kill you."
"If you go that way, Lord Rawl, you will die. Please let me whisper a secret message in your ear."
Kara handed her aegil to a woman behind her.
"You may hold your knife to me. I am without a weapon."
Richard gripped her hair in one fist and held a razor-sharp knife to her throat. If she so much as flinched, he intended to cut her throat. Kara put her mouth close to his ear.
"We are here to help you, Lord Rawl," she whispered. "It is the Toasted Toad's truth."
Richard straightened. "Where did you hear such a thing?"
"Do you know its meaning?"
"Commander General Trimax said that it is a coded message from First Wizard Zarander, so you would know we are loyal to you. He told me to tell no one but you."
"Who is General Trimax?"
"The Commander General, First File of the Palace Guard. They are loyal to you. The First File is the Ring of Steel around the Lord Rawl. Wizard Zarander told General Trimax to guard the Garden of Life at all cost. 2 days ago, that magic woman came. She killed nearly 300 of our men getting into the Garden of Life. We tried to stop her, but we could not. We have no magic against her. She killed close to 100 on her way out tonight. We followed her out and watched from a window on the third level. We saw her send lightning to strike your dragon from the sky. We saw you kill her. Only the true Lord Rawl could do that. Please, Lord Rawl, terrible things are happening in the Garden of Life. Let us take you there so you may stop the evil spirit."
Richard had no time to waste.
They had to have gotten that message from Zed. He had to trust them. All right, let's go, but I'm in a hurry. Grins came to each woman. Kara took back her Ajeel and grabbed him by the shirt at one shoulder. Another of the moored Sith gripped his shirt at the other shoulder. They started running, dragging him along with them. Kara whispered that he should be as quiet as possible. The other four spread out in front, scouting the way. They took him quickly but silently through small side halls and dark rooms. While the scout slipped up narrow servant stairs, Kara and the other pressed him up against the wall, crossing their lips with a finger, waiting until they heard a short whistle, then dashed up the stairs, pulling him along by his shirt. At the top of the stairs, he nearly tripped over the body of one of the four moored Sith who had gone ahead. Her face had been split open by a sword. 8 Daharan men in armor were sprawled in contorted positions down the hall, blood running from their ears. Richard recognized death caused by an Ajeel. One of the women in red leather at the end of the hall motioned them onward. Kara pulled him around a corner where the woman pointed, and up another staircase. He felt like a sack of laundry the way they yanked him this way and that, jamming him up against walls and in corners, while others scouted a clear course. He could hardly keep up with them as they ran down hall, still gripping his shirt at each shoulder, hauling him along. Richard lost track of where they were going as they went upstairs and through countless rooms. A few of the rooms had windows, and he could see that the sun was coming up. Richard was winded when he finally recognized the broad corridor they entered. Hundreds of men in uniforms of mail and shiny breastplates all dropped to a knee when they saw him. The clatter of all their armor and weapons echoed down the wide hall. Every man put a fist over his heart. When they came up, one stepped forward.
"Lord Rawl, I am Commander General Trimac. We are close to the Garden of Life. I will lead you there.
I know where it is.
Lord Rawl, you must hurry. The rebel generals have launched an attack. I don't know if we will be able to hold this position long, but we will hold it to the last man while you are beyond.
Thank you, General. Just hold them off until I send that bastard Darkan Rawl back to the underworld." The general gave a salute of his fist to his heart as Richard started moving. He trotted down a polished granite hall, he remembered. It took him to the huge gold-covered doors to the Garden of Life. Nearly in a trance of rage, Richard burst through the doors into the garden. The sun was up. Its first rays lit the treetops in the garden. Richard marched down the path, past the short vine-covered walls, and out onto the grass. In the center of the garden was a circle of white sand, sorcerer's sand. The round skrinbone sat in the corner with complicated lines drawn in the sand that encircled it. Beyond was the altar with the 3 boxes of Ordin, the gateway to another world. Each was beyond black, seeming as if it would suck the light from the room. From the opened box, a shaft of green light poured forth, up through the glass roof and into the sky. Whatever Darkan Rawl had been doing was opening the gateway. Sparkling light, blue, yellow, and red, spiraled around the shaft of green light. The white, glowing form of Darkan Rawl watched him stride across the grass. Richard stopped before the circle of sorcerer sand opposite him. A small smile spread on Darkan Rawl's lips.
"Welcome, my son," came the hiss of his voice.
Richard felt the scar of the handprint heat on his chest. He ignored the pain of it. Darkan Rawl's glowing blue eyes moved to the stone of tears hanging from Richard's neck. Darkan Rawl's gaze locked on Richard.
"I have spawned a great wizard. We would like you to join with us, Richard."
Richard said nothing. He seethed with wrath as he watched Darkan Rawl's smile widen. Through the fury of anger, the pounding wrath of magic, he watched, and he sought the calm center, too.
"We can offer you what no other can, Richard, what the Creator himself cannot offer. We are greater than the Creator. We would like you to join with us." "What could you possibly offer me?"
Darkan Rawl spread his glowing arms.
"Immortality."
Richard was too angry to laugh.
When did you succumb to the delusion that I would believe anything you would have to say?
It is true, Richard, he whispered. We have the power to grant it.
Just because you managed to get some of the sisters to believe your lies, that does not mean I would.
We are the keeper of the underworld. We control life and death.
We have the power to grant either, especially to one of your magic. You can be the master of the world of life, as I would have been before you interfered.
Not interested. Got anything better to offer? Darken Rawl's cruel smile widened. His eyebrows lifted.
Oh, yes, my son, he hissed. Oh, yes.
He swept his hand out over the circle of sand. Shimmering light formed into a person kneeling forward. The light coalesced into a recognizable form. Kaelin. She was in her white confessor's dress, kneeling forward. Her hair was cut short, just as in the vision he had had in the tower. A tear fell from her closed eyes as the side of her face pressed to the block. She mouthed his name, and that she loved him. Richard's heart pounded violently.
The dragon is wounded, Richard. She cannot take you to Adendrill. Your time has run out. You have no option left but to let us help you.
What do you mean, help? Rawl's smile returned.
I told you, we have the power of life and death. Without our help this afternoon before her people, this is what will happen.
His glowing hand swept out again. The blade's broad edge glinted in the air above her. The axe descended, thunking into the wooden block, sending out a spray of blood. Richard flinched. Kaelin's head tumbled away. Bright red blood spread beneath her, soaking into the sand, into the white dress, as her body toppled to the side.
No!
Richard screamed, his fists at his sides.
No!
Darken Rawl swept his hand over the body, and it vanished into sparkling light and faded away.
Just as I have taken away the vision of what will happen this day, we can stop the reality. We offer immortality not only to you, but if you join with us, to her, too.
Richard stood stunned. It sank in, really sank in, for the first time. Scarlet was wounded. She could not fly him to Adendrill. This was the winter solstice. Kaelin was going to die this day, and he had no way of getting to her. His breath came in ragged gasps. The world was ending for him. This was the meaning of the prophecy. If he took this offer, if he chose to stop her death, then the world would end for everyone else. He thought of Chase taking Rachel home to meet her new mother. He thought of all the happiness she would have in that life with love around her. He thought of his own life, with his father and mother, of the love, the happy times together, even the not-so-happy times, and how much it had meant to him. He thought about the time he had spent with Kaelin and the joy of being in love with her, and all the other people who must have had such joy, and would in the future, if there was a future.
You can walk hand in hand with her, Richard, forever.
Richard's eyes came up from the white sand. Hand in hand, through the ashes of death, forever. What would it do to Kaelin, to her love for him, if he offered her such a selfish destiny? She would be horrified. Then whenever she looked at him, she truly would see a monster, forever. He would live forever with her revulsion, not her love. Thus, in trying to save her, he would destroy not only everyone else, but her heart, too. The price was too high, even for his love. But this would end his life, his love, too. Richard was consumed with rage and calm at the same time. He stared into the glowing eyes of evil.
You would poison our love with your taint of hate? You don't even know the meaning of love.
The wrath swelled to a wild storm within him. At least he would extract his price for this, his vengeance. Richard lifted the Stone of Tears in his fist. Dark and Rawl staggered back a step.
"Richard, think about what you are doing.
You will pay for this."
Richard pulled a handful of black sorcerer's sand from his pocket and cast it onto the circle of white sand. Dark and Rawl threw his arms open.
"No, you fool!"
The white sand writhed as if alive, as if in pain. The symbols drawn in it twisted, contorting around themselves. The ground shook. Steaming fissures raced across the grassy ground. Lightning flared up from the sparkling white sand, flicking about the Garden of Life. The room thundered with a riot of noise and blinding light. The sorcerer's sand melted into a liquid pool of blue fire. The air shuddered with violent concussions. Dark and Rawl shook his fists to the sky.
"No!"
His head came down, and when he saw Richard coming slowly toward him, the Stone of Tears held out in his fist, he went still. His hand came up in forbidding. Richard staggered to a stop, the pain of the scar on his chest taking his breath. The agony seared through him. From deep within, he pulled resolve and made himself move despite the torment. Each step only increased the pain. It felt as if his flesh were burning off his bones and the marrow itself were boiling. In the calm at the center of the storm of anger, he was able to ignore it. Richard pulled the Stone of Tears off over his head. He held the leather thong out in his hands, the stone dangling before Dark and Rawl's face. Rawl shrank back. "You will wear this in the depths of death forever." Richard stepped closer.
"Kneel!"
The glowing form sank to its knees. The glowing eyes stayed on the stone in the air above. Richard lowered the leather thong to hang it over the head of his father's spirit. He paused. Over Darkenroll's head behind him, he saw the altar that held the boxes. The open one in the center, alive with things beyond knowing, was sending its green light upward in a beacon. Richard remembered what Anne, Nathan, and Warren had told him. If he used the stone for selfish reasons, for hate, it would tear the veil. He wanted more than anything to send Darkenroll to the depths of the underworld, to punish him forever for what he had done. But that would only accomplish what he already decided was beyond price. Besides, he had brought this on himself. That he had not done it intentionally made no difference. Life was not fair, it simply existed. If you accidentally stepped on a poison snake, you got bitten. Intentions were irrelevant. "I have caused my own